We have a group of students here who's been working hard to prepare this presentation to share about their experience in China this past fall. And as we begin, out of respect and out of desire to learn, I ask you to put away your devices and other distractions. So Ellen Conrad will introduce the morning, and let's begin.
All right, good morning, everyone. Good morning. My name is Ellen, and you picked a great day to come to Convocation because this is the China SST Convocation. Yeah. China, where I actually got this awesome coat. Let me just show you. Isn't this great? Is this a great coat? It has like a zipper, very insulating. I look awesome, it's fine. Anyway, this is just an opportunity for us to share with you all of the wonderful adventures that we had in the 3 months that we were in China. So first off, I would just like to start off with a dance to the most popular song in China. It is called the Xiaopingguo, which means the little apple song. And it's like kind of a love song. It's about like, it says that you are my little apple and like I never want you to leave, and it's great. We'll just show you. Are you guys ready?
Angeliki Santos, I'm a fourth year senior history and youth ministry.
And my name's Lee Powers, I'm a fourth year art major.
All right, so we're gonna talk about our experience in China. So our leaders were Steve and Rachel, and we also went with Esther and Lydia, and it was an honor to be with them. So this is our group. And so we arrived to Chengdu first. So Chengdu is in the Sichuan province. As you can see, the map on the left, use the heart, that's where Sichuan province is. And so we got to Chengdu, and we studied at Nanchun, which is where the heart is, right map. So we got to Chengdu, and we visited different places in Chengdu. And our favorite one was to visit the Chengdu Research Base, Giant Panda Breeding. And we went there, and we stayed in Chengdu for 2 days, and right after that, we went to Nanchun. Nanchun is about 3 hours away from Chengdu. It's about 1 million people, and we studied at the China West Normal University, which is about 30,000 students with 1,000 teachers, mostly a lot of female students, and transportation, yeah, we went to school by walking or taking the bus, and there are cars and mopeds and people walking everywhere. Chinese drivers are excellent drivers, by the way. Seriously.
So this photo was taken right after we met our host families in Nanchang. And then for our 6 weeks of study, we had language class in the morning, and we had two really nice language teachers. And for lunch, we had the option to eat in the school's cafeteria. They call this the canteen. And all of these are people who are freshmen. All the freshmen are required to do military training. And we could also eat outside of the university at a restaurant. And then in the afternoon, we would have a class on culture, politics, or arts. And usually, they were given by professors of the university. And we got to learn calligraphy, Tai Chi, and traditional music and dance. And National Week is China's week-long vacation that commemorates the end of the 1949 Chinese Civil War and the establishment of the People's Republic of China. So.
Photo?
Hey, can we take a picture?
So pretty much everywhere we went was really crowded, and people would be constantly asking us for our pictures. And during this time, we visited Zigong and Guan'an.
All right, so after the National Week, we went to, once we finished studying Chinese and culture, we went to the service places, Yilong, Lanzhong, and Wang'an. So Wang'an is pretty significant because it's Deng Xiaoping's hometown, who is a paramount leader from 1978 to 1992 in China and developer of the country's current economic reform and opening. So we studied, we taught the Friendship High School and Middle School in Wang. And the group, also another group went to Yilong, which is about 5 years old. The city is pretty developed, but it's very young, very recent. And also it's really close to the countryside. And the group that went to Lanzhong taught at the East Wind Middle School. And Lanzhong is pretty important because it's thought to be considered one of the four best preserved cities in China, because its streets preserved from the Ming and Qing dynasty. Our experience in the service places was very different. We taught we taught by ourselves or with someone else. Sometimes our classes ranged from 50 students to 80 students, so it was very different. Sometimes we taught 5 classes a week, and sometimes we taught 20 classes a week. So it just depended on what the teachers were asking us to do. The last week was kind of like our vacation week. And so we returned to Chengdu, we visited the seminary in Chengdu. We also visited some temples and places. One of the coolest part about it, we visited the giant Buddha in Lishan, which is the biggest stone Buddha in the world. We also went to different places in Chengdu, and then we went from Chengdu to Xi'an by the overnight train, and we slept in these little beds, and it was cool because we got to interact with other Chinese people. And in Xi'an, we visited Terracotta Warriors, and we also went to the ancient city wall, and we biked there, and we also went to the Muslim quarter. Then from Xi'an, we went to Beijing, and we visited the Summer Palace, the Forbidden City, the Tiananmen Square. And the Forbidden City is very important because it was the home of 24 emperors from the Ming and Qing dynasties, beginning in early 1400s. And then we ended our trip by going to the Great Wall. And now Jacob and Grace are going to talk about the delicious Sichuan food.
Hi, I'm Grace. I'm a senior environmental science and history double major. One of the reasons that I decided to go to China for SST was for the food. And one of the reasons that I loved China was for the food. So Sichuan food is so different from American Chinese food. It's different regionally in China too. Sichuan has some of the spiciest food, while the east and southern coasts have more seafood. The main ingredients are garlic, green onions, cilantro, oil, pork, soybean paste, peppers, potatoes, and other vegetables. Sichuan is a land of farming, so there's always cheap and fresh vegetables available. Like a pepper would be 8 cents or something. And it's really seriously spicy. As most of us can attest, during days in September and October, we couldn't eat a bowl of spicy beef noodles without breaking into a sweat. Lunch is the biggest meal of the day, followed by xiaoxi, which is the rest time for about an hour. And Sichuan culture revolves around meals and snacks everywhere. Meals are where business and pleasure mix. Spicy, oily, delicious vegetables along with rice and noodles, pork and dumplings kept me well fed and happy.
Okay. Okay, this is hot pot. A lot of the food in China, as my host brother described it, is very delicious, but also very unhealthy. So there's lots of oil in a lot of the food that is eaten. This hot pot is a social experience when you eat it in China. You go out with a bunch of people and it takes maybe 2 hours to eat a meal in this manner. At first, it sounds like an awesome idea. You get a giant pot of oil, all different types of meat and vegetables and whatever,
innards
and viscera, and just cook it in the oil and then transfer it to your own personal bowl, let it cool a little bit, and then transfer it to your mouth. And yeah, that sounds awesome. You also get to try lots of interesting new foods, like I ate intestines, cow stomach, coagulated pig's blood, cow heel, brain, and ears, yeah, and a bunch of things that looked interesting, but I never got translated. So, yeah. yeah, though there are some problems that a couple people ran into with hot pot. One of them is that it is considered polite in China for people to, your hosts, to put food in your bowl for you. And cow heel, which is very chewy, becomes less exciting after your host mom puts the fifth cow heel in your bowl and tells you to eat it. Also, it can be very spicy. As you can see, there are a lot of peppers in the oil generally. And this spice kind of builds up over time. I was also personally lucky enough that my host family on service, the first week of service, took me to hot pot 5 times, in addition to having leftovers for lunch. So I got a lot of hot pot. I think maybe the closest I got to God on SST was halfway through the hot pot that was so spicy it was making my host family cry. And the spice was building up in my mouth and in my bowl. I was lamenting the fact that in China, you don't get served cold drinks with meals. And I was starting to calculate how much hot tea I had left that I could sip to give some small measure of relief to the burning in my mouth. Then, out of nowhere, out of the kitchen, some workers at the restaurant come and they thank me for being in their restaurant, since I'm a foreigner, and give me the most cool, refreshing glass of lemonade I've ever had in my life. But that nightmarish experience aside, hot pot was mostly something that people just had to get used to. And once you knew what kind of foods you liked and how to pace yourself and people stopped putting food you didn't want in your bowl, it could actually be a very enjoyable experience.
All right, I think this is mine. Yep. Okay. Good morning, everyone. I'm Jacob Shetler. I am a fourth-year senior informatics with a math concentration major. And I'm going to talk about Mandarin Chinese, the language that we spoke. Besides the food, one of the most important aspects of having a great time on SST is knowing the language, so you're able to communicate with the people around you. So, how many of you know anything about Mandarin? Know words, phrases, sentence structure? Yeah, okay, I see like 2 hands. Okay, some more over here. All right, yeah, that's pretty much what I expected. China is economically and politically one of the most important countries in the world, and yet very few people in the United States know anything about the language. So, I'm going to teach you a little bit. So, there are 3 important parts to Chinese language: the written language, the spoken language, and then how you write it in the Latin alphabet. So, This is the written language. These are characters, Chinese characters. These are all fairly simple characters. And unlike languages that we're used to, you can't look at characters and sound them out. So if you get a huge text that's just in characters, there's no way you're able to read it unless you actually know the characters. You can start guessing, but it doesn't work out very well. Then there is how you pronounce the different characters. So I wrote the pronunciations in the Latin alphabet. So you can see underneath each character, there's a different way to pronounce it. What's important to remember is that each character can have multiple pronunciations depending on its context and multiple meanings. So just seeing a character by itself, you don't necessarily know what it means. The third part is the romanization of the language called pinyin. Pinyin takes the sound of the written language, of the spoken language, and just transcribes it phonetically. So that's what this is underneath the characters. And the last important part is the tones. So not only do you have to remember characters and how they're pronounced, you also have to remember the tone that goes with it. Because adding a different tone with a syllable can mean completely different things. So there's four tones up here. So the first one is a flat tone, ah. The second tone rises, ah. The third tone goes down and then up, ah. And the fourth tone just goes down, ah. So, for example, we knew three words that were all ma, but had different tones. So first tone, ma, that means mother. Second tone, ma, means spicy. And third tone, ma, means horse. So, you don't want to call your mother a horse. So you really have to get those tones right. So, speaking of words that sound similar, I'm now going to teach you an important phrase. So let's learn some Mandarin. Okay, so let's say you're really tired and you want to go to bed. So you might say, 我想睡觉. So please repeat each word after me. Ready?
我想睡.
Jiao.
Wo xiang shui jiao.
Right. So, if you make the mistake of putting third tones, so that's the down and then up, on the last two words, you're actually ordering some food. that's not a bad thing. Dumplings are pretty good. All right, so let's try this one. Wo xiang shui jiao. Wo xiang shui jiao. Very good. So, while this may seem like very, very confusing, the stories that you're going to hear today, you'll realize that it's far from impossible to learn the language. It definitely added to our confusion, though, as you're going to hear. And, you know, that's pretty good. You now, most of you have probably infinitely increased your ability to speak Mandarin. What I hope you can take away from this, besides that you now know how to order dumplings and say you're tired, is that a lot of us know very, very little about a language from a country that is ever and ever becoming more and more important in the world. As a community of global citizens, I hope this spurs your interest in thinking and learning more about China. Thanks.
All right, so we're going to talk a little bit about some confusion, which is inevitable given, you know, the language and stuff. So, Brian's
all right. Here. I'm Brian. I'm a third-year physics and math major, and this is one story in which me and Ellen were very confused as to what was going on. So there was one Friday morning on service that I woke up, went to breakfast, and my host mom was like, "You should get home from school after you finish your classes very fast, because we will be leaving to go see the red leaves after lunch." And naturally, I was very confused. So I get home, eat lunch, pack my bags, because we were planning on leaving from Friday all the way till Sunday night. And it ended up that we didn't leave at 12:30 as planned, which was usual, and we left about an hour later at 1:30. And I get in the car and find that Ellen is coming with me for this trip. So we drive all day. Both of us don't really know where we're going to. We just know that it's somewhere in the Chongqing province and that we are going to see some red leaves.
They also told us that the drive was going to be about 3 hours, but we ended up being in the car for nearly five. And we were just kind of like, I wonder when we're going to stop driving.
Yes. So finally, very late that night, we get into the town where we're staying, eat supper there, and then the next day, we go up to the mountains with the promise that we were going to hike around the mountains a little bit. So we get on top of the one mountain that we were driving to, proceed to walk around for about 5 minutes, get back in the car and drive for another 8 hours to our to our location where we planned on sleeping that night. And that's when it got even more confusing.
Yeah, so the town where we had stopped on our second night was actually my mother's family's hometown. It was the countryside, so it was kind of just like a smaller town. And we get in, and we're about to go to dinner, and then the police come. And they're like, oh, come with us. You know, they're speaking in Chinese, so I'm just like assuming that this is what they're saying. But they're like, okay, come with us. Like, you have to come with us. So my mother, my host mother, Brian, and I are taken to the police station. And they sit us down in this room, and they start asking a lot of questions. And so they're asking my mother questions about me and Brian, and like why we're here, where we're from, where are we going, what are we doing, how long have we been here, all these questions. They're asking my mother questions about like her citizenship. They're asking her, like they looked at our passports. And then they like asked me for my camera to look through my pictures. And we're like, what is going on? Like, it seemed like it took forever, especially because we were starving. At least I was starving.
It took at least half an hour to an hour for them to ask us all these questions.
At least. But anyway, so it wasn't until we left the police station that we figured out that they thought we were spies. Because we came to a town that was like probably within like 2 or 3 miles from like a military missile factory. And so because we were foreigners, they were very suspicious, and they wanted to make sure we were who we said we were. So they thought we were spies.
And as you can tell, me and Ellen would obviously make the best spies.
But anyway, that's one example of confusion.
Alrighty, so my name is Garrett Algrim. I'm a senior mathematics and interdisciplinary major. And on the theme of confusion and distress, I'm here to tell you about the uncomfortable nature of being interviewed for television. So, 9:30 one school night, I get a call from an unregistered number on my phone. I pick up. Hello? Hi, this is Peter from the Foreign Affairs Office. Is this Garrett? Yes, yes, this is Garrett. Great. Tomorrow, you will be interviewed by television at 6 o'clock. At this point, this is almost normal. Okay, 6 p.m., right? No, 6 a.m. They will interview you all day and follow you around. Okay, before I can really continue, he goes on. They also want you to go home for lunch so that they can interview you with your family. At this point, I tell him, I have lunch plans with my group. Oh, what a pity. Maybe you can cancel them. I'd really prefer not to cancel them. Oh, well, whoa, that is a pity. Are you sure you cannot cancel them? All right, fine, I'll cancel them. So I hang up. The next morning, rather than being rudely awoken at 6 a.m., I gracefully arise at 5 a.m. and wait around for an hour, bored. They arrive at 6, as they promised to do so. Interview me while eating breakfast, while making my bed, while walking out of the house. They drive me to school where I taught English. They interviewed me, or cameraed me, filmed me, walking into the classroom at least 3 times because my students were just not enthusiastic enough, the first two. Fortunately, though, through a combination of stealth, deception, and possibly being just incredibly boring, I managed to give them the slip by lunchtime and kept my lunch plans intact. So I thought all was well with the world at this point, until the next day when I get home for lunch and there's the news team once again sitting at the lunch table with my family. So they spend the next 3 hours asking me uncomfortable questions like, "So, who do you like more, your host mother or your host father?" "And why? Please explain in detail." "And what is your relationship with your host brother? What were your first impressions?" So I had to go through this for a while. And then later on, they got a little bit bored of asking me questions, so they started going through all of my stuff on television. I had been teaching myself in my free time how to draw, so I had this sketchbook at this point full of terrible doodles. They decided to go through each and every one, asking me questions on television. Yes, and then I had to draw a picture for them while they filmed me. Finally, to top off this interview, they go through all of my souvenirs with me. And so I'm going through. I've got a paper lantern, some loose leaf tea, teapots, silk. By the end, the interviewer just has this sour look on her face. "You buy very strange gifts." I'm like, "Oh, well, these are pretty normal things for Americans to get from China, I think. What would you get?" Oh, I would definitely get vinegar for..." "Okay, I'll get right on that, thanks." I do not end up buying vinegar, and by the time that I get home, my mother tells me I should have bought vinegar. So, yes.
Hey, I'm Ruben. So all during SST, I'd kind of wondered what I would talk about here at Convocation. I mean, it had crossed my mind a number of times, and so I was dealing with the possibilities. I mean, I'd had a lot of really great experiences, a lot of really fun times, so much good food. But it really came down to one of these last nights in China. We'd already left our service locations. We'd reunited in Nanchang. We'd kind of toured through the big cities, and we ended up in Beijing the last couple days there. And Jacob Shetler and I were sitting in our hotel room, and we decide, you know, what are we doing? We have to get out into the city, you know. So we go out, and it was an unfamiliar city, but we'd been walking around unfamiliar places for 3 months, so we just went out there, and we had our language skills, and we were all set. And we thought, you know, let's find a place to he cha, drink tea. And we didn't really think about it very much because we'd had a prior experience with trying to find a place like this at night. It was in the city of Zigong, and it was both Jacobs and I and Michael. We were wandering around trying to find a place to drink tea late at night, which there just aren't places like that. And we end up in this completely dark and completely deserted alleyway with a single illuminated doorway. So, you know, pretty inviting. There's like a shattered door inside the entrance, and we could read all of 4 characters on that sign, and they said, "Yicha yizuo, one tea, one seat." So, I mean, that was a bit too good of an invitation to pass up, one might say. So, I think Michael said something along the lines of, "You only live once," which, in retrospect, like, being alive should have been more of our concern. But we actually ended up having quite a nice cup of tea in what probably couldn't have been any more horrifying of surroundings. I took some flash photography while we were in there, and we made sure not to look at the pictures until we'd left. It's kind of hard to tell, but it was pretty bad. But I digress. Anyways, Jacob and I were looking for tea in Beijing, and we come across this unusual sight on the ground. It's like some damp ashes. And, you know, you see strange things every day in China, so we just kind of walked by it. And then later on, we saw this guy kind of bend down and sprinkle some water on the ground, and he had some papers there, and we were walking by, and then he lit them on fire. What? We did not see that coming. And eventually, we came across other people doing this, and we saw, like, you know, there's a woman lighting stuff on fire here. There's another guy, like, in the middle of the street, too. This wasn't, like, a minor back roads. This was, like, probably not 2 miles from Tiananmen Square, the Forbidden City. I mean, this is, like, the capital of China, and people What? But my point is, and don't get me wrong, I'm sure they had a great reason for this. It's probably something deeply cultural, deeply religious. But my point is, Jacob and I, we were just completely baffled. And, you know, utter confusion for me just became one of these fundamental SST experiences. So, I mean, eventually there came a point where we thought, you know, we could expect the unexpected. But then something like this would just pop out and completely catch us off guard. I remember during service once, my host mom and I were wandering around, and she was showing me some of the sights in our small city, and we'd crossed the river to look at this abandoned pagoda thing. And we had to go up through these little farm plots to get there, and then on the way back down, we were kind of hiking down, navigating this kind of rocky terrain, and she was in high heels, I don't know. But she reached down and grabbed this radish-like vegetable and just took it. Like all the way home, and I had no idea. Like, why did she just rob some farmer of produce? I don't know. And these are questions that I'll probably never answer. And really, that's just the end of the story. I was standing there, like, utterly nonplussed. You know, like taken aback. What is happening? But you know, I guess in a way, the Chinese got a bigger dose of this than we did. I mean, we'd learned a little bit of the language. We'd encountered a bit of the culture. But they did not see us coming, let me tell you. I mean, imagine these people in their little, like, literal hole in the wall tea shop, and these playing their card game, and these four gigantic foreigners walk in asking to hucha, and you, like, what would you expect of that? Like, I can't even imagine seeing that, having only seen Han ethnicity people all your life. So I guess that really is the great thing about the world, you know? It doesn't matter who you are or where you are. You just kind of have to accept that sometimes you will not see it coming. I think it's wonderful. I think it makes the world unpredictable, exciting. I think it makes it a very human sort of a place. And that's just great, I think. One last example, the university we all studied at had class bells, and they were nothing like you could imagine. They were deafening. Like, all you could think of when they were going was just, why? Well, when they were playing, conversation was impossible. Classes ground to a halt. And they weren't just bells. They were entire songs.
The words at the end there said something like, class is dismissed, or class is beginning. One of them, I forget which song it was, but it just goes on, and the teachers throw up their hands in frustration and don't know what to do. They can't talk over it. Anyway, on a similar note, I'm here to talk to you about traffic, noise, and overcrowding in China, some of my least favorite things about my SST experience. So I'll try not to be too bitter here. So as if living in a foreign country and trying to speak a foreign language aren't confusing enough, you have to cope with traffic, and you have to cope with people crowding you on all sides all the time, and with overwhelming noise. So one of my first experiences with the traffic in China was one morning that I had overslept, and the rest of the group was already in the bus getting ready to go across four lanes of traffic in morning rush hour. And so I came out of the hotel and was just standing there on the edge, and the cars were zooming by, and there's no real good way to cross the lanes of traffic. You kind of just have to wade out into it. And a couple days into my China SST experience, I wasn't really ready for that, so I sort of waited on the edge and waited until finally another group leader who was still behind me came and helped me. And we just kind of walked into it, and the cars parted around us. It's a little magical, and I wouldn't have expected to make it through that alive. So in Chinese traffic, the typical notions of Eastern cultures being collectivist while Western cultures are individualist are turned on their head. So every Chinese driver on the road has the mission of reaching their destination as quickly as possible, and while they do it, they have to inconvenience as many other drivers as they possibly can. So every move a driver makes when they're driving in China seems calculated to slow the flow of traffic as much as possible, and the incessant honking increases the disorientation. So here's a little guide on when you should honk when you're driving in China. You honk when you're changing lanes, when you're considering changing lanes, when you're speeding up, slowing down, passing, or you just haven't had an opportunity to honk in a while. So pedestrians have a hard time competing with the traffic noise, but they do their best. Their two favorite strategies are hawking up huge quantities of spit as they walk along, or carrying on obnoxiously loud phone conversations. Here's a translation of that conversation for you. Hello. Hi. 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 Okay. Okay. Good. 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 Just a minute. Okay. 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 Bye.
Hi, so I'm Michael Yoder. I'm a senior, and I'm actually going to be reading something Kiernan wrote because we lost him on the wall and we figured that maybe we should honor his memory. So, before I begin, let me clarify that I didn't come out of SST with a clear idea of how I changed and what I learned. I'm actually still not really sure what happened. Speaking in convo is kind of weird for me because it implies that you can learn something from my experiences. That being said, I'm going to talk for a few minutes about teaching English at a high school in Yilong. The city of Yilong is less than 10 years old, and already there's a population of probably over 100,000 people. Most people in Yilong come from the countryside, and this actually held true with all of our students. Most of our students had never seen a foreigner before, which made us celebrities. The word people sometimes use to describe us translates as handsome man god. So this treatment was quite disturbing. When we first came onto campus and walked past the classroom buildings, hundreds of students saw us and began screaming and waving. It was like that scene in The Shawshank Redemption, where Andy first comes to prison and everyone is yelling at the new prisoners, taking bets on who will snap first. Maybe that's an exaggeration, but it definitely took a toll on our mental health. For the next few weeks, the constant screaming, waving, and picture-taking did not let up. The first day we arrived, teachers would grab us and put us in front of classes to free talk. It was like show and tell, except we were the objects. Some classes knew very little English, and some were conversational. We had no idea beforehand. Throughout classes, students would take pictures of us and generally give us so much attention that in between classes, I would go hide in the bathrooms. I have always considered myself a mentally stable person, but 2 weeks in, I was about to snap. This is also due to the lack of meaningful interactions with people because of the massive language barrier. There's a fine line between dehumanizing people and ignoring them for the sake of one's own sanity. And I definitely crossed this line more than once throughout service. It was incredibly frustrating because I thought that SST was supposed to be about humanizing other people, learning about other cultures, but I was kind of doing the opposite in order to survive. Teaching English was difficult because we were never sure of what level the students were at. And there were about 80 students to a class. It quickly became apparent, though, that teaching English was not why we were here. We were really here to teach about America and the West, a place that they had heard a lot about, but most of them would never go. There was this general love for American culture, and also a lot of misconceptions. We were not allowed to talk about religion or politics, but we got pretty close with lessons like Christmas and things. We taught them about racism in America and then tried to get them to think about racism in China. According to everyone I talked to, racism does not exist in China, which, of course, is false. Being in the structured setting of a classroom helped me to interact positively with students, a contrast to my instinct to run away outside of the classroom. I'm thankful for the class times. They gave me a positive place to channel the little energy I had left. So in reality, my time in Yilong may have been much different from what I just told you. Other SSTers had more positive experiences teaching, and the service locations definitely varied a lot. I hope you learned something from this, and if not, and that's where Kiernan's reflection ends, because that's where he fell off the wall. So that's all we got from him.
Hello. My name is Amanda Vanderzee. I'm a junior interdis major, and I went on China SST, clearly. The most challenging part of my SST experience was leaving behind the relationships I had forged there. Although I had heard spectacular stories of host families, I could never have predicted the overwhelming love and care that my families gave me. My host families fed me, cared for me when I was sick, showered me with tokens of our friendship, and most astoundingly, welcomed me into their hearts and their homes. I will not pretend that Chinese customs and culture are comparative to what I am used to in the United States, but I think there is a foundation of experiences and emotions that can be found any place in the world. My host sister Han Piao in Nanchang is only 7 days younger than me, and because of our closeness in age, we are going through similar life events, such as insecurity about the future, sleepless nights studying, and considering ambitions that don't necessarily match our parents' dreams for us. And though Gao Ping, my host in Guang'an, is a 32-year-old English teacher, she was more of an older sister than a host mom. Gao Ping and I became very close, bonding over our mutual love of movies and drinking tea. And we often talked about intimate topics, the pressures she faced when it came to her marriage and having children. Like many women, even in the United States, Gao Ping was pressured into an early marriage because of cultural expectations. And now she struggles with the same pressures as she makes decisions about starting a family. And like many of us, she's trying to find a balance between these expectations and her own dreams. The relationships I developed with these two amazing women have touched my life forever. On the surface, we are quite different. We each have unique cultural traditions and expressions. But in the end, we are more similar than not, united by our experiences and by the influence we have on one another. The friendships I cultivated with Han Piao and Gao Ping are the most rewarding aspect of my SST experience. But these connections also made returning home painful and confusing, as many other SSTers may know. My heart aches to think of how far we are from one another, but I firmly believe that relationships are the most meaningful part of SST, and I hope that everyone has the opportunity to benefit from traveling because of these connections. And thanks to Gao Ping and Han Piao, I have strengthened and deepened my ability to empathize with others. Our connections are strong, and I am hopeful that one day I will be reunited with the friends that I made on my SST experience, who made that experience so powerful. Thank you.
Okay, so that's the end of convocation. We're going to sing a song as you leave. Yeah, I guess that's it. So you're dismissed. No.